This is an ABC podcast.
Hi there and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Alex Mann. Across Australia, there are growing concerns about a shortage of teachers in public schools. And those concerns go beyond the usual complaints about teachers' pay and working conditions. In New South Wales, there are stories of schools with dozens of merged classes a day, and even classes being run without teachers. It's just after 9 a.m. on a cool, crisp Tuesday morning, and this high school in rural New South Wales is already in a crisis.
Okay, how do we end up with cover for today?
Well, I've just had another one call in sick.
It's mid-May, and on this day, there are 12 teachers off work, almost a quarter of the staff. Some have COVID, and others are off-site on a sports excursion. And the absences have just exacerbated an existing chronic shortage of teachers. The principal, Grant, and his head teacher, Scott, are desperately trying to find a solution.
So I'm going to have to try and pull some magic and find someone to cover period one, but we're looking extremely busy today.
It's a delicate juggle. As a principal, Grant says he can only give out 4 extra classes to each teacher. But it's only week 4 of term and he's trying to save them for when flu season hits. And besides, everyone's already overworked. He literally has no answer for the dilemma in front of him.
Is it the maths classes again?
Yeah.
Okay.
So maths is uncovered, year 12 English is uncovered, year 12 SLR is uncovered. It's not looking great today.
A lot of those kids had double maths yesterday afternoon too with other teachers, so they're going to miss out again today.
The Year 12 classes aren't the only ones without a teacher. There's a Year 8 art class too. The substitute that Grant's found is a new teacher in her last year of uni.
There's no choice, is there?
No. So I'll have to quickly duck down and get her lesson for her so that she can teach that in 20 minutes' time.
It's not ideal, but it'll have to do.
The poor teacher's only going to find out within a few minutes of the lesson starting that they've got that class, and they might be relying on that period to prepare something for their classes during the day or something else, but they're going to be told in a couple of minutes that they've got to take this class because there's no other option. People need to know that there is a real issue and that it's not something just to be swept under the carpet. Like, it's a real issue.
This kind of access, hearing senior school staff working through a crisis in real time inside a school, is very rare. But these teachers are so desperate that they've decided to speak with our reporter, Mayetta Clark, who's here with me now. Hey, Mayetta.
Hey, Alex.
Mayetta, just what kind of risks are these guys, Grant and Scott, taking here by talking to you?
Well, Alex, these guys aren't actually supposed to be speaking to the media in this way at all. Like, government school teachers usually have to get permission first. They can't say anything that will undermine confidence in public education. And all contentious media inquiries are supposed to be referred up. They could be breaching the New South Wales Education Department's code of conduct just by talking to me.
And did they tell you why they're choosing to speak up about all of this now?
So they feel the massive staff shortages in their school and others across the state are so bad that students are really starting to suffer, particularly the most vulnerable students. And they've tried raising their concerns internally, but students are still getting left short. And now they think if something's really going to be done about it, if the department and government are going to get serious, the public needs to know.
Now, it's worth saying that we've taken a few steps to protect some of the teachers' identities in this story, as well as the school itself that you heard these two guys talking from just before. So we're not naming the school or using the teachers' last names. Mayetta, did you find out why there is this teacher shortage at the moment? I mean, is this just a COVID thing like we're seeing in other industries around Australia?
Well, that's what I wanted to know. I wanted to find out the real reason behind these shortages, and I wanted to understand how on earth has this situation gotten so bad? And it turns out it's way bigger than just New South Wales, and COVID is just one part of it.
Okay, so where did you start?
The first place I went seeking answers was the streets of Sydney.
1, 2, 3, 4, not enough teachers, we need more!
1, 2, 3, 4, not enough teachers, we need more!
More than thanks! More than thanks! More than thanks! More than thanks!
So I'm here in the middle of several thousand protesters. I can see schools from all over the state. There's Seaforth, there's Datto, Cronulla, schools from the South Coast. It's just intense. There are a lot of people here.
No teachers, no future.
The enterprise bargaining round between the teachers' union and the state government collapsed a few months ago, and a wave of angry public school teachers is about to roll down one of the city's main streets.
More than this. Now.
Their biggest gripe is that there aren't enough teachers in schools, their pay has been stagnating, and their workload is backbreaking. It's a familiar set of complaints from the education sector. But recently, COVID has exacerbated the underlying causes, and teachers say things have gotten a whole lot worse. It's so bad, they're striking for only the second time in 10 years.
No teachers, no future!
No teachers, no future!
I peel off from the crowds and cross the road to meet up with a young teacher I'll call Sarah, who I've been swapping texts with.
Hey! How are you feeling?
I'm feeling really good that I made it. I'm back and I'm angry and I'm ready.
Sarah's an English and support teacher at a school in southwest Sydney. She's also an elected delegate for the teachers' union.
What are you most worried about?
I'm worried about our schools running out of qualified teachers. I'm worried about the most vulnerable schools in our system having no teachers and not being able to offer education. And as a result, those students not having access to education, and then the future repercussions of that being that we don't have social movement in our most vulnerable areas.
I decide to follow Sarah through the rally.
Can I follow you, tag along with you for a little bit?
Yeah, come along.
Okay, thanks.
I'll bring you over.
She takes me to meet some of her colleagues from school so I can hear their reasons for taking to the streets.
You can meet one of my friends who is currently the head teacher of our support unit, who is also a year advisor, also the head of our timetabling team. She's the sole person responsible for timetabling our entire school. She has worked till 10 p.m. every night this week doing it. And our timetable changes so much because of our teacher shortages and because of our high turnover of staff. So it means that the job isn't done just once a year, it's done every day.
God, that's insane.
Insane. But she's here, she's angry, so let's get it.
I'll call the timetabling teacher Lara. She doesn't want me to use her real name for fear of being sanctioned by her employer, the state's education department. Lara tells me just how bad the shortages are at their school.
We've got art teachers teaching maths. We've got people that aren't trained or experienced in special education taking our most disadvantaged classes. We just don't have anyone to fill these positions.
Next to Lara stands John Ryan. He's an art teacher and he's close to retirement, so he doesn't mind me using his real name.
What brings you here today?
Because I've given 25 years to this profession and I've never seen people more overworked, underpaid and more distractions. I can't stand seeing this profession that I love being run into the ground through neglect.
John tells me the problem is about more than just pay and conditions. He's not seeing enough new teachers come into schools to replace people as they're leaving. And these days, there aren't enough casuals to fill the gap.
I've never, ever seen it this bad. And I really don't blame younger people for being hesitant at coming into this role. I can barely keep up. I can barely keep up. And I'm quite an experienced teacher.
But the thing is, the New South Wales Department of Education's own internal advice has been warning about a shortage of specialised teachers for years. I've seen department stats from last year that show public schools were missing over 1,100 permanent teachers. And in 2020, they warned that New South Wales would run out of teachers to replace those retiring and match student enrolments in the next 5 years. The growing problem has left shortages in critical areas and is having a real impact on the lives of the people at this rally and the students they teach.
Are people leaving because of the workload?
100%. People are definitely going. They're voting with their feet.
For John, it's a bitter end to a career he's devoted his life to. Now, he's not even sure he'll make it to retirement.
I could probably just make it, but it's going to be a very unpleasant end to a profession that I went into with enormous enthusiasm and have enjoyed for a couple of decades. I felt like I've been doing something useful. This leaves a very sour taste at the end of my career. This is awful.
I'm so sorry.
It's not your fault. You didn't do it. The fault, I think, is largely about 200 metres down the road from here.
Which is explicitly?
Which is Macquarie Street.
John nods towards the imposing New South Wales Parliament House building just down the road, then heads back into the thick of the protest.
United, we'll never be defeated. Teachers, united.
We'll never be defeated. Teachers, united. We'll never be defeated.
At this stage, it's still not entirely clear to me how the New South Wales government or its education department is responsible for the problems the teachers were telling me about. So I've been telling my contacts I'm keen to get a better look at the issue up close, and there's one school that keeps coming up in conversation. The people who work there are keen to speak out, but they don't want what they say to reflect badly on the school, so all I'll say is that it's in regional New South Wales.
So I am here at a school, it's a high school, I can't tell you which one, but the principal has invited me here because of teacher shortages. And he is really concerned about the impact that all of this is having and about the future of the kids at this school. So I'm going to head up and see how he's doing.
The principal introduces me to one of his senior staff, who after a while agrees to talk. To protect his identity, I'll call him Simon. It's not his real name.
Hi, I'm Mayetta.
Hey Mayetta, how are you?
I'm good, how are you? Nice to meet you too.
Yeah.
We talk for a bit about the school and its staffing problems. Yesterday, they were 15 teachers short, almost a third of his entire staff. And Simon tries to explain how things got so bad. In part, he says, the story of the state's teacher shortages follows the story of his own career.
I did 3 years at a rural school, my first 3 years, and that was a really positive experience.
When Simon first started teaching back in 2004, teacher shortages were in the news and mostly concentrated in the regions. To get on top of his work, Simon would do a bit of extra class prep and marking after work or on weekends, but overall, the workload seemed manageable.
Certainly, I don't remember the administrative side of teaching. Like, I don't recall that being a burden back in the early days.
But over time, that changed. Around 2012, new policies and new syllabuses were introduced. Simon was appointed as head teacher. He got a pay rise and a swag of new responsibilities. And while staff shortages continued in the background, it never got to crisis point.
But whilst that kind of level of panic was there, we always kind of got there in the end.
But the underlying problems didn't go away. It was still hard to attract new teachers and retain the existing ones. And on a personal level, Simon felt he was drowning in a growing load of administrative compliance work.
I just remember having a conversation with my wife at the time, and I think I was very frustrated because I think I'd spent basically a whole week quite late at night and then the weekend, and I'd done that for quite a while to try and catch up. But I remember going home and having a conversation with my wife saying, this is not sustainable. It can't be.
Then, in March 2020, the already stretched profession was forced to absorb a massive shock.
Pubs, gyms, cinemas, most places where people get together will now shut down. The Prime Minister urges us to not let the coronavirus break the Australian spirit. And schools in many places will soon close. So what can parents do to keep their kids' education going through the shutdown?
In the states worst affected by COVID, teachers shifted to online learning. At times, they were required to teach two classes, one online and the other in person. Stress levels soared as teachers worked to quickly adapt lessons and to engage students and their parents in new styles of learning.
that's been thrust upon us. You know, when I became a teacher, you know, quite a few years ago now, I never would have envisaged that I'd be ever teaching remotely. So it is, the steepest of learning curves.
Then, as the pandemic entered a new phase and kids returned to class, teachers found themselves covering for sick colleagues and juggling a raft of student welfare problems. The increased workload and burnout during this period pushed some teachers into early retirement. Others dropped out. And by the end of 2020, Simon started getting worried.
The end of 2020, I think, was probably the first time that I really got a bit concerned about where we were going to be as a school at the start of the new year in terms of being able to fill our full teaching allocation.
Then in 2021, the New South Wales government did something that inadvertently made things worse for the state's teachers. To address the problem of kids falling behind on their schoolwork during the lockdowns, they set up a tutoring program called COVID ILSP. It relied partly on casual teachers to provide extra help to the kids that needed it. But a government MP has admitted the COVID ILS program hoovered up the state's limited supply of casual teachers, teachers that many schools relied on to fill staff shortages. The situation at Simon's school got even worse. As the 2022 school year began, they were down 5 full-time teachers.
Last term was a dog's breakfast. We had 5 teachers that we still hadn't filled. We had maybe 1 casual teacher that was any sort of with any reliability. I think we had another one that was able to come in on selected days.
At the beginning of term 2, they'd filled 3 vacant positions, and then his town was hit by COVID.
You always hope that a miracle was going to happen, and you know, after a couple of weeks, some teachers will come out of the woodwork and apply for the positions that hadn't seen the positions before. But I think if you haven't got teachers that have applied for it at the end of last year, they're not just going to miraculously appear because they don't exist.
Today, the situation that Simon describes is being felt in schools around Australia. Teachers' unions in every other state have told me they're struggling too. In Queensland and Western Australia, they can't get teachers in leafy green metro areas. In the ACT, the government has established a task force to tackle the issue. And in Tasmania, the teachers' union called the crisis quite extraordinary. In New South Wales, there are shortages from Bondi to Broken Hill, from Coffs Harbour to Jindabyne and Kiama. An English teacher I spoke to from southwest Sydney gave me a shocking snapshot of the problem. His name is Joel Wallington.
So we had 31 merged classes today, 20 of which were Year 12 classes.
Joel's also the treasurer of his local union branch.
Yeah, basically the word at the moment is if you're away and you have seniors, they're going to the library. They're not getting covered. We had 1 casual teacher in today.
Joel had 4 of those merged classes in the library. In all, he says he was watching around 65 kids.
Wait, can you just say that again? Like, how many merged classes did you have today?
There was 31.
31?
Yeah. That's the worst day we've had so far. For sure the worst day we've had so far.
Joel explained that they had 31 teachers needing cover. But they weren't all off work. It was a combination of not having enough permanent teachers, sick leave, almost no casual teachers, and NAPLAN assessments to run. About a week later, I heard at least 35 classes were merged at Joel's school. And on top of this, Joel says the school has been losing staff.
It's like we're losing some of even the most dedicated people, you know. And the new people, you know, people who've come in and just gone, no, this is too much.
What's clear now is that this situation didn't start with COVID. But since COVID, it's gotten much worse. And the underlying structural problems that were once hidden are now hopelessly exposed. The number of people choosing to study teaching is falling. Only around half of those who start an undergraduate degree finish it. And amongst teachers currently in the profession, some crazy number, like 60%, are thinking of leaving.
For a very long time, there's always been shortages of one type or another.
Mark Grant is the head of the Australian Institute for Teaching and School Leadership. His organisation provides independent advice to federal and state education ministers about teaching in schools.
But what used to be quite legitimately seen as a rural or regional or a very remote problem in New South Wales from a staffing point of view is now very much happening in metropolitan areas as well. And there's some reasons people speculate for all of that.
During the past 2 years, some teachers have left due to COVID conditions. Either they didn't want to be vaccinated or they had underlying illnesses that made them nervous about being in a high transmission environment like a classroom. But that's just a recent development. Mark says rising real estate prices, stagnant wages, and a growing workload have made teaching a less attractive profession for years. And in some places where the population is growing, the demand for teachers just hasn't been met.
So over time, more students, more schools, not necessarily more teachers in the right areas with the right curriculum expertise.
The problems Mark describes are to varying degrees felt nationally, but he says there's no national approach to addressing them.
It's fair to say, and certainly nationally, it's not coordinated, and we need a better match between the demand side for the teachers of tomorrow and the supply side that universities are being paid nearly $800 million to provide. And at the centre of that relationship between demand and supply is the ability of 4 million students to have an appropriately qualified, high-quality teacher in front of them every day.
Back at the high school in regional New South Wales, the principal tells me staff shortages have hamstrung his ability to provide quality education. And the solution he's had to come up with, it isn't pretty. To demonstrate what he means, he's invited me into the school to see it firsthand.
We'll go through the library here.
His name is Grant, and our first stop is a Year 12 maths class.
The senior study's up the top there, so there's some seniors up there that have got a double period of maths at the moment.
Double period of maths and no teacher? Or
yeah, their teacher's off today and we couldn't replace them, so they're under minimal supervision in the library. They're supposed to be working on their maths. They've been left work to do.
They don't look like they're working on their maths, I've got to say.
No, which is really, you know, HSC year. I mean, it's not a HSC course, like a HSC exam course, but yeah, it's certainly kids when they haven't got a teacher in front of them, it's hard to some of them to be motivated.
There's a half attempt at activity as the students notice that their school principal is peering into the classroom. Suddenly they're opening their books.
Yeah, funny that. They've seen me again, so yeah.
Later, Grant shows me another classroom.
So we're off to visit a Year 12 class that has no teacher at the moment, or is minimally supervised. Standard English. In their final year of school, we're going to have a look and see what the kids are up to. What do you think they'll... Do you think they'll actually be doing work?
I hope so. The head teacher's across the hallway, so she would be probably keeping an eye on them, so we'll see.
As we walk in, students start loading up work on their laptops.
You guys got teachers?
No.
No.
We never have teachers.
So you guys got stuff to go on with? Yeah. All right. Okay. Can I help you with anything?
No.
Okay.
Are you guys actually working?
Yeah.
One of them tells me they've got some English work they're doing.
All right.
No, looks like work is just starting.
Yeah. We just don't have the casuals. The seniors are normally the first to go because they can at least safely be unsupervised, even though they're not being productive.
Exactly what impact this is having on educational outcomes for Grant students is hard to say. He says it's too early to tell. But when I eventually find one of his students who's okay to talk, the situation he describes makes minimal supervision classes sound pretty ineffective. How do you say your name, Cohen?
Yeah, Cohen.
Cohen's 16 and in year 11 at the high school where Grant is the principal.
How often do you reckon it is, like, that you don't have a teacher for class?
Oh, it's been pretty frequently lately.
And when there's no teacher, this is what happens.
So pretty much, like, another teacher from that faculty will come into your class at the start, explain what they want done, and then just leave. So you're just sitting there with the rest of your class and are expected to have the work done.
And what do you guys do after the teacher leaves?
Not what we're supposed to.
Cohen says he and the other students have good intentions, but without a proper lesson structure and teaching help, it's easy to get distracted.
So you start doing the work, and then you can't do like a question that you're a bit like 50-50 on. And then just because you don't know it, so you don't really have anyone to ask, so you pull out your phone to search it up. And then once you get on your phone, you know what I mean? Like, you search it up, then you open up your Instagram or you're having a swipe, and then one thing leads to another, you don't really. You get a bit carried away, and then because there's no teacher there to sort of, you know, get off your phone, you just keep going. And then before you know, the teacher's walking back in with 5 minutes to go, asking where our work is, and we haven't done it.
Cohen tells me he's starting to notice it affect his performance.
It does worry me a bit because when it comes test time, like we had a test a couple of weeks back for our math class, and there was some stuff I just looked at, and I'm normally pretty good with my math, but I had no idea what was going on. Just had a random guess. So it makes it pretty difficult at times, but I guess you just got to work with what you got, don't you?
When he eventually finishes school, Cohen wants to go to uni and learn to become a radiologist. But with so many missed classes, he's worried he might not make the grade. Do you feel like you'll be prepared for life after school?
At this rate, probably not. Well, because obviously I want to go to uni after school, I say radiology and physio and that, but at the end of the day, like, you need a good ATAR to get really in wherever. So if I'm missing all this work, when it comes to like my HSC and stuff, if I don't really know the topics and stuff that I'm studying, my mark probably won't be that good, which might affect my ATAR, and then my whole future could be a bit different than what I want, really.
About 4 months ago, Cohen's school principal, Grant, decided to write a frank letter to parents. In it, he outlined the problems he and his staff were facing and the impact it was having. But before he sent it, he decided to run it by the New South Wales Department of Education. When he got a reply, he noticed someone, an executive, had rewritten chunks of it.
Do you have the before and after communiques?
Yeah, I do. This one's before, and this one is after.
Point out the main differences to me.
That was removed.
In Grant's original letter, he'd provided a list of temporary arrangements for each class that didn't have a qualified subject teacher. When I look at the rewritten letter, that section has been removed entirely. In another part of the original letter, Grant had told parents that sometimes the kids on minimal supervision will end up in the playground instead of being taught in a classroom. But in the rewritten letter, someone from the department has written minimal supervision does not mean that students miss out on a lesson. And the definition of minimal supervision has been amended to match the definition provided by the minister in Parliament.
Basically says, if kids are minimally supervised, that they're actively engaged in learning all the time and are supervised by the teacher and do not miss out on any learning, and try putting four different classes from four different year groups in the playground and engaging them in meaningful learning, it's impossible.
So this is an outright lie?
Pretty much. It's very misleading, that's for sure.
In an email that accompanied the rewritten letter, a department executive wrote, "I don't want the media or various members of Parliament picking up on this detail and attacking the minister with it." Grant refused to send the rewritten letter.
I didn't send that out. I went somewhere in between because that is just outright lying to parents, and I don't do that. Sorry.
I asked the New South Wales Education Minister, Sarah Mitchell, about the email, and she said, "Communicating clearly to parents about all matters relating to their children's learning is important, so I do find it unacceptable that someone in the department requested changes to a letter to parents to prevent criticism of myself or the department." The New South Wales Education Department didn't get back to me before deadline.
Back at Grant School, he's keen to introduce me to his deputy, Rick. Rick's tall and large-framed with tradesman's hands from his pre-teaching days as a fitter and turner. When we get into his office, he stands up to greet us.
Rick, this is Mayetta.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks.
That's good.
Rick's been teaching for 35 years. I ask him if he remembers his early days.
Yep, I remember being exhausted. I'd always worked in a trade or labouring jobs and stuff like that, and I'd go to footy training and things like that after. When I first started teaching, I remember going home and having a nana nap. I was exhausted.
Grant mentions we've just been looking in on a Year 12 minimal supervision class, and Rick's face darkens.
In all my years of teaching, I have never seen anything as bad as this. It's atrocious. And I think it's starting to really affect the welfare of everyone within the school. No, that's it. That's all I got.
Rick tries to stop himself from saying more, but I want to know what he's seeing around him and how the staff shortages are affecting the kids. His anger comes tumbling out.
I think it's affecting the staff, which is trickling down onto the students. Like, we're already overworked. I think that's acknowledged with all the goodwill and everything like that. And when you've got five staff that aren't teaching, they're vacant positions, that load goes back onto head teachers and classroom teachers and here, the senior exec. So we're not getting our normal duties done. So what happens to those? And then you get dickheads from the department hammering you, saying, what about this target, what about this target, what about this target? And I'm at an age now too, and there's many people that I've spoken to that are looking at getting out. It's just too much, and there's people younger than me that are doing that. And you see kids, you wonder why they're disillusioned. You know, 10 times a week they're sitting by themselves because you can't staff them. And then we get hammered about our HSC results, and you think, piss off, dickheads.
Rick's anger's so raw, he's throwing caution away. He and his colleagues are saying something teachers would never normally say publicly to the media. But Rick sees the system failing his students, 20% of whom are Aboriginal, and that enrages him.
A lot of kids want to get trades and things like that. They haven't got a teacher. They're learning out of a textbook, and it's not doing them any good in any way, shape or form. They get restless then, so behaviour issues come into it. Discipline, and I'd be exactly the same. I'm bored, I've got nothing to do, I'm doing the same shit day in, day out. I'd get angry, so.
What kind of misbehaviour do you see?
We got decent kids here, but they'll start going wandering. That's our big thing. A little bit, how would you say, I'm trying to think of the word.
Disengaged?
Oh, absolutely disengaged. And not rebellious, but they find it really, you know, why do you get to a class on time if you're going to sit there in front of no one, or you're getting a textbook again for the 30th time in 2 weeks? Yeah, disillusioned. Yeah.
I asked Grant and Rick who they blame for this current situation, and Rick couldn't be more explicit.
Fuckwits.
They both blame the department, and they are scathing.
I just think there's this massive disrespect for the profession, right from the top all the way through. And it's kind of evolved that these unrealistic expectations of what should happen in schools and what should happen in classrooms because you went to school once. Like, I as a principal myself always make sure that I've actually got a class, because if I don't, you realise, you lose touch with the reality as to what to expect in the classroom. And you're expecting things to happen in classrooms that just aren't feasible with all the other things you've got to do.
The situation at Grant School is just one example of the current state of teaching in Australia. A COVID-stretched workforce that's kind of sick of covering up for an industry-wide shortage of qualified staff. The familiar complaints about pay and conditions have a new, more acute context. But most of what I heard from teachers and principals about the shortage being worse than ever before was anecdotal. And when I asked the Education Department in New South Wales about what was happening there, they said the problem was increased demand.
I definitely accept that there's an undeniable challenge in front of us when you've got increasing enrolments in New South Wales public schools, Mayetta, which is a good problem to have.
Murat Dizdar is the New South Wales Department of Education's Deputy Secretary for School Performance.
It goes to the problem of you're going to have to certainly have more schools built more teachers, more leadership teams, but that is a good axis to have because it indicates that there's a growing confidence in public education delivery when you've got increasing enrolments. The backdrop is that the teaching graduate numbers are declining, so demand is increasing.
But this good problem to have, as Murat Dizdar puts it, of student enrolments putting stress on teacher supply, is hardly new. And the warnings about it getting worse have come from within his own department. A 2020 internal presentation made for the New South Wales Department of Education and obtained by the Teachers Union included a dire warning that if something didn't change soon, New South Wales would run out of teachers in 5 years' time. Are we now at a point where this is a crisis?
It's a massive challenge in front of New South Wales, in front of every jurisdiction in this country, in front of every country across the globe, to have a strong pipeline of qualified teachers coming through to meet ongoing population growth and demand for schooling.
While Murat admits that some schools may be struggling to find staff, he says that on the whole, New South Wales is doing pretty well, especially considering the challenges posed by the COVID pandemic.
We don't shy away from the fact that some of our schools have got significant challenges in filling permanent vacancies or meeting casual and temporary coverage needs inside their schools. We are a very large system. We are some 92,000 teachers on the payroll today. That's temporary, part-time and casual teachers. And the vacancy rate across the 92,000, given the size and scale of our workforce, is quite small, something close to 3%. In fact, as of today, 2.8%.
Murat says the department is working hard to attract more teachers. As we chat, he lists off the initiatives designed to help address the shortages. There's a $125 million teacher supply strategy. There's also a program to persuade mid-career professionals to switch into teaching. And there are recruitment bonuses, a casual supplementation program, and a rural experience program, just to name a few. But schools tell me that while some programs are helpful, others not so much.
Maeda, there's no easy solutions. There's no one silver bullet that will create an untapped pipeline of teachers into any jurisdiction. And this is not a challenge only here in New South Wales. It's in fact a national challenge, an international challenge that cuts across jurisdictions and goes to the standing of the teaching profession in the eyes of society, in the eyes of a nation, and we need to be doing a lot more to lift the profile and standing of the teaching profession to make it an attractive profession for future graduates, because we're going to need a strong pipeline into the teaching profession.
The New South Wales Education Minister, Sarah Mitchell, was harsher in her assessment of the scale of the problem. In a statement, she wrote, "What is different in New South Wales is that we have a union that acknowledges behind closed doors that this is a spike driven by illness absenteeism, while publicly they weaponise it." Having said that, she also acknowledged that the nature of teaching has changed over time. And to deal with that, she's directed the Secretary of the Department of Education to cut teachers' admin tasks by 20%. She agreed that merged classes aren't ideal, but she said they're better than learning from home. Her statement read, "We know after 2.5 years of COVID that the best place for our students is to be at school." Back at the school I've been visiting, there's a rare moment of calm. I'm in an office with Principal Grant and the teacher we're calling Simon, and the two guys are chatting about the challenges they're facing. It's clear Grant's starting to doubt if even his most loyal staff will stick around. And while I'm listening, he puts a question directly to Simon.
You have a daughter that's due to go into high school in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
You originally come from the North Coast. If she comes into high school and the teacher shortage still exists, as it did in term one for us, and she spends significant number of lessons in the playground under minimal supervision, will you stay?
The room is silent, and Simon looks down for a moment, and then he stumbles out an answer.
It's certainly something that we would have to look at
sit down and have a discussion as a family. And, you know, loyalty only goes so far. And as I said, whilst I certainly like it here, it's not fair on her. We don't want to look back and say, oh, well, yeah, we hung around because we felt we had to, and, you know, you'd spent half your education in the playground, and, you know, what's that going to mean for her later on in life? So, yeah, short answer is probably not.
How do you feel hearing that, Grant?
Oh, I just totally get it. Just absolutely totally get it, and wouldn't expect. Like, for us, family always comes first. But, you know, so this kind of situation, professionals are leaving town, like, it just exacerbates the problem for us. So certainly don't want it to happen, but totally get it.
I turn the question back on Grant. I ask him how much longer he himself can go on in the current conditions.
I honestly don't know, to be honest. I don't know. I hope I can keep going. I love my job, absolutely love it. I love my family, I love my job. But as you said, work really, really hard, and I don't mind working hard when you get outcomes, but when you work your backside off and the people around you are doing the same and the kids are still missing out, then that's hard to take.
Background Briefing sound producers are Lila Schoener and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Simon Branthwaite and fact-checking by Dunya Karagic. The supervising producer is David Cook, our executive producer is Alex Mann, and I'm Mayetta Clark. You can follow Background Briefing for free wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.